Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson and Tony Vitagliano. And now Steve Paisley Jordahl joins us.
Hello, everybody.
And I did promise to mention this in our story meeting. He is not in Paisley today. He has a shirt on. I liked it. I complimented the shirt. It looks like a piano keyboard.
Yeah, kind of a contemporary version of piano keyboard.
Yeah, and then Fred ruined it because he said it looks like syringes and it looks like a COVID shirt.
Yeah.
And now I can't unsee that.
Well, I didn't wear the Paisley, a new shirt and everything. I felt like 3 days in a row was kind of loosening you from your moorings. I didn't want to keep going down that road.
Well, let me just assure you, I have been afloat, loosened from my moorings for decades.
Yeah, so. Stephen Colbert has 10 of those shirts. The vaccine skit he did?
Yeah, yes.
It reminds me of the people dressed up as syringes dancing around a show.
Oh my God, forget about that.
Yeah.
That was a bizarre moment in television history.
I have second thoughts about what those things look
Now what?
They look like dental instruments.
I liked your first take.
Yeah.
Dental instruments.
Yeah, I see little hooks on the end there, you know.
I'm sticking with piano.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So anyway, I just want to let you know I initially liked your shirt.
Thank you.
Now Fred has ruined it.
I know. So. Great.
Well, all right. You're up.
All right. I'd like to introduce you all to Aaron Spencer. The voters of Lone Oak County, Arkansas, have a decision to make in front of them. He is running. Aaron Spencer is running for sheriff of Lone Oak County. He is also scheduled to appear in court on second-degree murder charges. How in the world is a guy that's going to be running for sheriff end up in court or vice versa? This is how it happened. In 2024, Spencer woke up to find his 14-year-old daughter missing from her bedroom. She had put a stuffed animal in a hoodie and put it under the blankets and everything. He goes looking for her, and he finds her in the front seat of a truck with a gentleman named Michael Fosler. Now, he was familiar with Michael Fosler because Michael Fosler had been accused and had been charged with more than 40 sex crimes, many perpetrated against Spencer's daughter, the 14-year-old girl that he was with at the time. He ran the car off the road, shot the guy dead, and now is facing, it was first-degree murder charges, they've lowered that to second-degree murder charges. And he is running for sheriff of Lone Oak County in order to fix a broken system. If your guy's out, and he had a protection order against this guy. If he's out after 40 times and he's not behind bars, there's a system to be fixed.
All right, so the person who was shot.
Yes.
Fosler?
67-year-old Michael Fosler, F-O-S-L-E-R.
Okay, he had a order against him to stay away from this man's. What's the sheriff's name again?
Aaron Spencer.
Spencer's daughter.
Sheriff want potential sheriff.
Okay. Right. Oh yeah, that's true. All right. Now, first of all, let me just say, folks, it's not our place to get involved in this election. That's
correct.
This is the county, the folks in Arkansas, they're going to have to make this decision. We did talk about this issue, Fred, because we regularly cover on this show how the system in many places in the U.S. is broken, clearly broken. Usually it's blue cities, in blue states, where people with a long rap sheet are out on the street, they commit a crime. Now, this particular case, this man, Fosler, had not yet, if I'm not mistaken, not yet been convicted of these charges. But clearly, with a protective order, something should have been done to keep this man away from Spencer's 14-year-old daughter. So I'm tossing this hot potato to you first, because we talked about this morning about what every father in the country probably would have done. And yet we do have a system of law and order where you don't want to encourage people to take the law into their own hands. What say you?
Well, let me just say that the people in this county are going to have to decide with regards to the election. I think if he's elected sheriff of that county, what the people of that good county are saying is that we can sympathize with his dad as to what he did. Now, the flip side of all of that is if we were to say he was justified in taking the life of another man, that's where the argument takes a different voice. Because if you say he was justified in taking this man's life, we understand his anger. It's just horrible what happened. But if we say he was justified in doing that, you are opening up a Pandora's box of controversy as far as then you go to part B. So are you saying anybody who is really angry over something that happened to a family member has a right to go out and do this? And I would say no, certainly not. We have a system. Now, the system is badly broken.
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
And even when it works, it oftentimes works slowly.
Yes.
So people may be very angry on Monday, and now they're contemplating maybe 18 months before they get some justice. Maybe they're encouraged to end the problem on Tuesday.
Yes.
And that becomes an issue.
Yes. So like I say, it's going to be up to the people to decide, but I can see the prosecution in the case having a tough time finding, I'm not sure how big this county is, finding a jury that everybody on there is saying, yeah, I don't know too much about this case.
Right.
So it's going to be an interesting one to watch, but I think we have to be very careful. We can sympathize with the dad, but we have to be very careful in saying, yes, he was justified.
All right, Tony, you got five kids. Two of them are daughters.
I might need to sit this one out.
I think it's the fact that this man was still walking around, having been charged with up to 40 counts of sexual assault crimes of various kinds, just goes to show how far our system has fallen. So, yes, you can say no system is perfect, right? Everybody could say throughout history, well, the system is imperfect. Absolutely. But I think it's gotten more imperfect. That's the only way I can describe it. So that you end up with situations like this where people tend to take matters into their own hands. And that is a symptom, not a cause. So I think that's kind of where we're at with this situation. Perhaps his charges will be dropped to no murder,
and,
no murder degree. That would be a situation I wouldn't be too sad about. Let me just try and be as political, as tactful about this as possible.
All right, Steve, you brought this story up, so you're going to have to go on the record.
Well, I was wondering if it could be argued, and I have a daughter, and I would feel exactly the same way. Could it be argued that, you got to make sure I get the names right, that could it be argued that Mr. Fosler was in the process of committing the 41st act of sexual violence against his daughter? And by shooting him, he was stopping a crime from happening.
Yeah.
Certainly, if I was a lawyer, and none of us are lawyers, but if I was a lawyer, and that would probably be one of my tacts I'd consider.
Look, I'll say this. This little girl there was no due process for her. She didn't get to decide whether these acts were committed against her or not, if I had to get. And with the 40 charges, I'm assuming there were lots of evidence. So that's one thing that I think an aspect of an imperfect system is that, for instance, Luigi Mangione, he shot and killed father and husband, the UnitedHealthcare CEO. he's getting due process, and the due process is going to drag out for years, and there's going to be charges dropped. There's going to be appeals made. You know who didn't get due process? Mm-hmm. The father and the husband, the CEO who was shot and killed. That's to me, I understand the system is doing what it, you know, what it was designed to do, which is to give due process and a fair trial before your peers. I understand that. But there are certain situations, I think, where we it tends to drag on too much.
My opinion on this is, and this is the part that's broken, it's not just the length of time. It's that if a person is credibly charged with 40 counts, that person should not be walking around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. That person should be in jail. The Constitution guarantees a fair and speedy trial. So part of this is you can't drag this out for 18 months unless it's the defense attorney who's dragging it out. But a person who has 40 counts should not be walking around.
Right.
That, to me, is step one. And that's the problem we are seeing in blue cities all over the country. People with long rap sheets. And now part of this is judges who are corrupt. In my opinion, they're corrupt, not in terms of bribery, but in terms of their understanding of law. You have prosecutors who are George Soros type prosecutors that think the system has failed these charged criminals, therefore they should be out on the street. But somebody with 40 counts of an egregious crime, we're not talking about 40 speeding tickets here. Mm-hmm. We're talking about 40 charges of these kind of heinous crimes. That person should be in jail and not walking around because they could go and do something else.
Right.
Now, I'm guessing also this 14-year-old probably wasn't kidnapped.
Groomed.
She was groomed. Yeah. But the way the system works, and in this case it is right, 14-year-old is not consenting, even if she says she's consenting,
right.
because she's been groomed. But she is out. She is still a victim who is vulnerable,
right.
an alleged victim. Okay, I want to make that. Fosler shouldn't have been out.
Right, I agree.
And that's the first step in correcting this kind of thing. And guess what? If he wasn't out, then the girl wouldn't have been in his car, and the father wouldn't have found him, and in absolute insanity of anger, likely wouldn't have had the opportunity to kill him.
I have a feeling if Mr. Spencer wins the election, the next Mr. Fosler will not be out.
Well, that'll be up to, though, the prosecutor, yes. and the judge.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the frustration for law enforcement is they arrest these people, and then they see them right back out in the street at the local Dairy Queen.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Oh, yeah, I'm getting wound up.
So yeah.
we need to move on.
John Solomon, an excellent reporter, not aligned with any network, but independent reporter is what I'm trying to say. He is reporting that the FBI was offered 30 million lines of phone mapping data by Representative Adam Kinzinger in relationship to the January 6th Capitol riots.
Now explain. I'm not sure I understand that. Say that again.
The FBI
was
offered 30 million lines of phone data by former Representative Adam Kinzinger,
okay.
who's one of his aides found or collected the data, and he was offering it to the FBI in hopes of helping them prosecute the January 6th attacks. 30 million lines of data. Now, the data did not include conversations, but it did include length of calls, numbers they were calling, locations, where were you standing when you made the phone call, if it's from a cell phone. So, and what this is bringing up, 30 million lines of data, that's got to be a lot of people that they had under investigations. Bringing up some civil rights complaints. Does the FBI, certainly they didn't get warrants on however many thousands of people it took to generate 30 million lines of data.
But the FBI accepted
the memo did not reveal whether the Bureau ever took Kinzinger up on the offer, but it does reveal, according to John Solomon, the sheer magnitude of a formed surveillance project the Democrats ran by using congressional subpoenas to gather phone records about Americans' contact with the Trump White House.
All right, so Fred, I'm going to bring something up, and Tony, you can follow up. I don't know where we're going to go, wind up going in this country in protecting civil rights and preventing us from being living in an all-out surveillance state. But it seems to me, if I remember right, after January 6th, the FBI showed up at a lot of doorsteps saying, we know you are around the Capitol because your phone pinged,
yep.
Okay? We know you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to ask you what you were doing there.
Yep.
Okay? And I'm not, I have no idea legally what you can charge people with just because they were around the Capitol. Maybe they were able to tell if they were in the Capitol, okay? But the fact is, with facial recognition software and you bought a chalupa at the local Taco Bell, we know that because we got I'm not sure if there's even a right to privacy in existence, and then I'll toss it to Tony as well.
Yeah, you know, when I was growing up, there was no talk of Ring cameras.
Right.
Which they use now. There are cameras everywhere. Pull up to an intersection in any size city, and you got a blue camera looking at you.
Yeah.
And again, the argument, but that's just for your own safety.
Yeah, because they do use it to catch killers.
Well,
they probably even caught Charlie Kirk's alleged killer.
Yeah, or if there's a traffic accident, you can go to the cameras and say, okay, yeah, it was Party B's fault, not Party A's.
Yeah.
You know? So we're glad about that. People are installing cameras in their car to protect them from, you know, if there's
a collision
out there. Yep. So we welcome all of these things, but the price you pay for all of these things is that some unscrupulous individual in prosecution and in this case, the Biden FBI, whatever, they can use these things to create a scenario.
Right.
Because you were at the donut shop. We know you were there. I remember in the wake of January the 6th, there was a family, I think, that was in Washington at that time. They lived in Alaska. And the FBI came and knocked on their door like 2 or 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
And saying, we want to talk to you. And we want, by the way, we want your phones and your laptop may have been used, all of those sorts of things. So that's where it gets scary. So society is going to have to understand, are we going to put limits on Ring cameras and all of these sorts of things? Or are we going to say, are going to weigh it and say, no, we need these kinds of things. Like I said, when I was growing up, there was no, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have cameras like that, all those sorts of things. But as I say, there are arguments for and against, and it gets pretty scary when you have, the problem here is not the cameras.
Right.
The problem here is the corrupt people who take those that information and they politicize it and saying, we find out that George is a Republican, I'm going to go after them.
Yeah, because your chances of winning against the full might of the federal government, if they target you, slim to none. And even if you do win, you're bankrupt. All right,
well,
Tony.
The more disturbing part of this story, Steve, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that this was members of Congress who were offering this data. I don't know how, first of all, they acquired 30 million records of phone data and contacts, but they're the ones offering it to the FBI. Now, if I had to guess, I didn't say whether it says the FBI accepted it or not. Does it say, Steve?
It does not reveal whether they accepted it. And to answer your first question, the data had been collected by then-former Representative Denver Riggleman, an ex-Republican who was a staffer on Capitol Hill Riot Committee and who later helped Hunter Biden's legal team in its efforts to cast doubt on the laptop belonging to Joe Biden's son.
Well, that tracks. So if I had to guess, the FBI probably didn't accept it because they're like, we've already got this. I mean, we've already got this data. It's worthless. But that, to me, disturbs me because now you have these former Republicans. I use quotes there. And you got Kinzinger. You got these Democrats wanting to play cops and robbers and help catch, you know, some January 6th insurrectionists. I just want to know how they got that information. Because to me, yes, the FBI, I don't agree with it. You know, their use of warrants or sometimes warrantless acquisitions of information and data. But I certainly don't want members of Congress, most of whom are you know, couldn't pass a fifth grade history test, going out collecting information on people, just like I said, trying to play cops and robbers. And then on the flip side of that, encouraging city officials, encouraging other government officials to hide and shelter illegal immigrants who were criminals that ICE is trying to track down.
Right.
So, you know, you had the grandma who was eating a funnel cake outside the Capitol building, gets hunted down to the ends of the earth, and they're willing to help the FBI, whoever, find that person. But you got the illegal immigrant who's a criminal, has got, you know, 10 years of arrest. Well, we need to help. We're not helping. You know,
right.
We're not going to help anybody find that guy and track him down.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anyways. All right.
Well, it looks like the social contagion known as transgenderism is dropping off. We may be past this point where everybody wants to identify as transgender. The Center for Heterodox Social Sciences took some raw data from the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expressions, FIRE, and they charted this out to they show where on several college campuses, and by FIRE's data, about 2023, there was it reached its peak as to the number, the percentage of people at Andover University, for example, it was somewhere around 9% that identified as something other than male or female. That by 2025 is now about 2%. So we're seeing basically a survey about sexual orientation. I'm reading from the Center for Heterodox Social Studies. While there is a broader spread of data points, the basic pattern looks similar. Rising nonconformity from 2010 to 2023 with a 10-point return to the norm in the ensuing 2 years.
Well, Fred, we said when this phenomenon was developing that this was bizarre, mm-hmm. because no previous surveying data ever showed numbers that high of young people claiming to be LGBTQ. This seemed to be part of this idea of social contagion.
Yeah.
Was really a help in understanding how this thing had happened. That you had young people who were sympathetic to the struggles of maybe a friend or a couple of friends, and they wanted to, in solidarity, identify with them. And yes, I'm gender fluid too. It is good to see this starting to go back to a more normal read on this. But the other thing I just want to point out, it shows the susceptibility of young people to woke ideology that they were inundated with, propaganda in their schools, even down into junior high and lower, but all the way through college.
Well, I think what has happened since 2023 is that we've been developing a database that shows the negative impact of these decisions.
Yes.
So people are being educated about what can happen. You're getting involved with something that cannot be completely reversed.
Right.
When you're removing body parts, et cetera, et cetera. So it's education. It's full education. My only shame is to the medical community that went along with
this. Amen to that.
You know,
it's terrible.
Terrible on your part, doctors.
Yep. And maybe they're going to get sued. I'd like to see upcomings.
Yes.
And these people being held accountable for what permanent changes they did without medical backup.
Yes.
That's what they were doing. All right, folks, that's all the time we've got for this edition of Today's Issues. More great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. And Lord willing, we'll see you right back here tomorrow.